Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. Liz Loza, Matt Harmon, a wonderfully mooted, big mooted Brett Rader, our producer here. We are on Radio Row in Miami.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole, it's actually a whole crew of people
it's
here.
It's fantastic.
And there's
you
a whole crew of people
out?
Back there. No, yes. I don't know if we need to go through the whole list of.
All right.
It's taking a lot of people to make this happen. More
I
than
know.
Usual.
Well, we're going to talk fantasy a little bit later. Surprise. It's going to be a minute till we get to that. But we'll spend the second half of the show previewing the big game. But first,
the large contest.
Have to start with some breaking news. I feel a little bit selfish. Because guess what? It's about the Bears. I will say also in Miami, Matt, I don't know if you know this, there's a lot of like paraphernalia, team paraphernalia, and you feel the need to like take a selfie and there's helmets everywhere. And I did see a Bears helmet. And so I immediately was like, well, is this a rekindling or is this a love the one you're with situation?
Sure.
And then I hung out with Devin Hester.
Oh.
And then I hung out with Greg Olson. And
ah,
I feel like,
Bear, yes.
Right, there might be a rekindling. I mean, but then I heard this news.
And then you got that push alert.
Right. And the news is that Mitchell Trubisky, the Bears starting quarterback. My God, was that a great pick.
Say it one more time.
Mitch
the Bears
starting
quarterback.
What? Was hurt the entire season. And he just got surgery. This explains so much. .. Except it was on his non-throwing shoulder. So
I thought that was going to be, you know, the excuse. Like, oh, it's his shoulder was all messed up. Of course he couldn't throw. And here we find out it's on his non-throwing shoulder. Now, to be fair, you could say that this is why he wasn't doing a lot of running. Didn't want to expose himself to the same type of contact.
I mean, it wasn't his ankle or his knee, bro.
Right, but you got to throw that shoulder around if you're
sure.
going to be... If you're going to be out there taking hits,
sliding
around, getting in the dirt, that shoulder could be problematic.
You know what's more problematic to me is that this gives...
So many things are more problematic when it comes to Mitchell Trubisky.
John DeFilippo has even more to work with now.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, he's got to rehab the non-throwing shoulder and then rehab the throwing shoulder.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, look, this really is like... It's a Loza experience, you know? Like, you've got Trubisky.
Can we hashtag that?
You've got Trubisky. You've got your boy John DeFilippo. You could honestly say Mitchell Trubisky has gone from being the number two pick in the draft, you know, a high-valued asset, to an underdog. And no one loves themselves an underdog like Liz Loza.
Matt Harmon, that was exquisite.
Didn't see that one coming.
I did not. That might be, like, the second time you've ever surprised me.
I have been prepping that one for all of 5 minutes before you showed up.
Well, it showed.
Terrific.
So that's the news in Chicago. Let's talk about the news in Miami. This will probably not surprise you because anytime we go to a city for something, I end up falling in love with that city.
Yeah.
Miami is fantastic. Like the vibrancy, the energy, the buzz.
The weather.
Also, a lot of Peruvian people here. I am Peruvian. I just smashed some ceviche with some ají amarillo. Oh, my gosh. The food here is fantastic. Also, people are speaking to me in Spanish. Like, I'm you know, practicing all that. What's been your experience of Miami so far?
I mean, I think the one thing, quote, quick power ranking. 1-2, Nashville, Miami. Which one's better to you? Come on. I'm pulling at the heartstrings. Let's go. Don't think. Answer.
I mean, So the old me loved Nashville. The new me loves Miami.
All right. I'm into that.
2020 vision.
I'm into that. I think I like Nashville better. But I would say the one thing that's very different between that city and the one that we're in now, everything here is a lot more spread out. Like my hotel is kind of far from Radio Row where we're on right now. But Marlins Park was closer to it where we did media night. Mm-hmm. You got to see a lot of the city, which has been fun. It's
South Beach.
It's beautiful at night by the way. Like great skyline. The city looks great.
You're on
lit
the
up.
Water.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. I mean, it's been awesome. I really enjoyed it here. So
you mentioned media night at Marlins Park. What was your experience? What were the players for you? Okay. How about we say this? What was the player that you were most excited to talk to? And then the player that most surprised you that you spoke to?
Yeah, I think the player I was most excited to talk to is, you know, we talked about this too a little bit just off the air. It was Richard Sherman for me, just because he's like such an iconic NFL figure. Like I think he is part of the fabric of the league and has been such a central figure for, you know, now two iterations, like the early Seahawks to where we are now with the 49ers. But I'd say a player that really surprised me was Raheem Mostert. And I mean, he's in the news right now because he's coming off a big NFC championship game, but it was fun to listen to him just engage with the media, you know, on his riser. I thought it interesting. He was going ahead and listing which cities that he liked the most, and then obviously went, oh, San Francisco, because he's played for so many teams. I asked him which city has the best food, and he said New York.
Oh.
Which I thought was whatever, but, you know, I mean, he's played for a lot of different teams, and, you know, New York does stand out as, you know, the pizza place. It's great, that type of stuff.
And the Chicagoan, we got a whole pizza situation.
Oh, well, yeah, that's an entirely different situation.
Well, you opened the can of worms, friend. I will say, so I spoke to Travis Kelce, which was, it was great. I mean, he was willing to play along. He looked right into your eyes. He was very engaging. I totally understood that it factor that people talk about. I understood why he would be a leader in the offense. Also really appreciated his openness and his appreciation for being there. I asked him if his brother Jason, who had just been at the Super Bowl, obviously 2 years prior, gave him any advice. And he said that his brother was enjoying his new baby. And so he kind of didn't want his brother's experience to cloud his own.
Yeah.
And that, you know, he'd talk to him a little bit later, more one-on-one. So I thought that was interesting. I think the player that most surprised me, Kyle Juszczyk was fantastic.
Yeah, he was cool.
You know,
it was also great because he was one of the players on the riser, but by
the
far,
podium,
by far had like the least crowd around him. So you could really get right up there with him, you know, ask him about the fullback position and like, cause he's in a very unique role. He's a very unique player.
Well, and we've talked even on this podcast, how the Shanahan system utilizes the fullback at a much higher rate than most other offenses. Because he went to Harvard, made a joke that I threw a little bit of Ivy shade saying that I went to a place called James Devlin U. If you don't know what that means, then,
that's
get on the
you.
Google and figure it out. Tevin Coleman.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't talk to me. He was a player I didn't talk to. He felt the need to just pass on.
Well, plug your video and kind of explain why that happened.
So as part of the media night experience, our Kendall Freer, who is one of our social leads, came up with this idea to do a Florida man, test the Florida man knowledge of the player since we're here in Miami, with two headlines, one real, one fake, and then have various players determine which one was real and which one was fake. And we were having a lot of fun with it. Tevin Coleman, however, wanted no part of it. I did the whole spiel and he just said, I'm good, and walked away. And then I almost said, but how about that shoulder? Didn't do it, though.
Yeah, well.
Didn't do it in the moment.
But it made for a really funny ending to the video, so people should go check
Thank
that
you.
Out on our Twitter page.
The Yahoo Sports Twitter handle and Instagram handles for that. Lastly, I just have to say, I spoke to Katie Sowers.
Yeah.
And that was, she did not have a podium, which surprised me, but they created a makeshift podium, obviously assistant coach for the San Francisco 49ers. Incredible to see her at the Super Bowl. You know, I am good friends with Jen Welter, who was the first female to coach in the NFL. You've worked with her as well on rookie orientation. But watching this throng of people just surround Katie. And she had more people than Kyle Juszczyk surrounding her. And I, you know, a lot of people were asking the same question. What does it feel like to be the first woman? And she gave very cogent, engaging answers every time. She talked a lot about finding your why, knowing your value. I asked her about Scott Pioli, who she credits to helping her in her career and mentoring her quite a bit. She was Scott Pioli's daughter's fifth grade teacher. He recognized her and kind of mentored her through the NFL process. And Scott Pioli, I should also mention, is going to be a guest on the Yahoo Sports NFL pregame show.
Boom, plug.
Should check that out.
Check that box.
Download the Yahoo Sports app. You can watch the game live, but you can also watch the pregame live, and Scott will be joining us for that. But back to Katie, I asked her about her relationship with Scott Pioli, and she said she just wanted to thank him. And then I admittedly got really choked up because it was like one of those, I'm getting choked up a little bit now. Like it was one of those moments where you're sitting in it thinking like, this is real life. I can't believe we're here and I can't believe you're here. And I was just like, thank you. That got cut from the piece because nobody wants to see my mascara run, I guess.
Well, but still it's a great moment. Like, it's just one of those things too. Like you get to kind of feel like you're the story is the players, the story is the game and everything leading up to it. But you get to feel like a a kind of small cast member in it. And, you know, you get to, that's the cool part about this. And not just talking to the players that are, and the teams and the coaches that are in the Super Bowl, but just everybody, I think, that comes through the stage and comes through, you get to kind of just tap into the whole experience. It's really
cool. The energy is insane. I mean, watching the Kansas City Chiefs come out, I said, this will never get old. I hope it never gets old, because I have chills every single time. And
you never want to become one of those like cynical, like, oh, great. This
is cynicism
like,
is easy.
Yeah, exactly. It's much cooler to kind of be in all of the moment.
I say that, however, you know, Matt, entering the 2019 regular season, we were both pretty cynical about the 49ers backfield.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Mentioned Tevin Coleman.
Kind of.
I Matt Burita, who I actually talked to on media night as well, from Florida. We had thoughts about him, and here it is, one of the biggest stories of the postseason, one of the best underdogs, Colonel Mostert, if you will, establishing himself with multi-touchdown game 2 weeks ago. Obviously, that's going to, because you remember the last thing you saw, elevate his running back stock from a fantasy perspective. But do you think that that's warranted? And now that Coleman's been, because at various points throughout the season, you saw these guys change hands, though none of them outside of Mostert, you know, recently, I guess Coleman as well, received, like, I guess what I'm saying is Burita never really saw more than 12 touches.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
Mostert had more than 15 carries one time all year. So, I mean, yeah, there was a stretch where Coleman was, like, in terms of touches and snaps and stuff, was the lead back. But, and that's kind of like, we could say that we were cynical about this backfield. I mean, kind of, but at the same time,
well, it was like a segue, Matt. So,
yeah, sure. I started to, but a lot of people are like that. It's like, well, this backfield has no clarity. Like, avoid it. Well, no, you can't do that, because you have to try, because this is one of the best back. It's like the Patriots. Like, this backfield consistently produces production. I mean, like, it's on the paper here. Like, Colonel Mostert is the guy now. At different points, Tevin Coleman was productive. I mean, Breida, this is why he was a lottery ticket, because the backfield produces fantasy points. And, like, man, it might not be one of these three guys next year. It might be somebody else they draft. It might be some other random free agent pickup. Like, hey, maybe Jeff Wilson becomes that goal line guy again. But bottom line, there will be production in this backfield. So the answer can never be, it's too hard to solve. Like, you have to try.
I do think you can eschew this backfield, knowing that maybe, depending on your league, of course, that whoever does draft him, if they're not seeing immediate production because of the carousel or the platoon, then that would be a waiver wire target a month into the season.
Well, if you think about it,
I mean, it's a gamble too. But.
Right, exactly. But Coleman was a guy that, like, I drafted a decent amount of Tevin Coleman. He got hurt, like, right away. Then he was a guy that then, like, a month or two later, becomes a hot waiver wire pickup.
Right.
Exactly. So maybe you can say in your drafts, go for the cheaper assets. Like, Breida was a great draft pick because he was cheap. Like, Mostert was not even a person in our vision at that point.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that you can certainly in 2020, like, maybe take some shots at those cheaper guys, because I doubt that we're going to have, like, one established player. Also, by the way, like, we've gone this whole conversation without mentioning Jerick McKinnon, who people were also drafting despite all that negativity. So you got to try
and lean into the value. I think we'll have obviously more conversation about this as the summer unfolds into the fall. But I want to talk about presently the Chiefs backfield.
Yeah.
Damian Williams, finally a thing, or is it time? I mean, this one I have to let you answer as the face melting GIF poster Darwin Thompson truther. The floor is yours, my friend. Let it rip.
No. Pass. No, but seriously, I mean, Damian Williams is establishing himself right now. Like, he's been the clear feature back in the playoffs, but who knows if that's going to be the case. I mean, it might well be the case in 2020, but I know our own Andy Behrens, like, we were forced to, I said forced.
Ooh,
we
Chewy, were, he said forced.
I said
he
forced.
Said
I'm
forced.
So sorry,
I did
but
not.
We were required work-wise because
we were asked and motivated to.
We had to rank our top 10 at each position a couple of weeks ago. We talked about this in the last podcast, and I think for the running backs, I think at number 10, Andy put number 10,
whoever
Kansas City drafts.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that we will have on the radar, like, you know, even if it's a second, third round pick, if it's a fourth round pick, like, people will be, this is another backfield, like, it breeds production. So it's another one that maybe Damian Williams is expensive next year, but you go for that cheaper rookie, or that's why you drafted a Darwin Thompson if you're a
and you know it's a stash like option,
yeah.
Right? Also, a little bit of telling, a little nugget from media night. Now, telling but not surprising. Let me preface it by that, by saying that LaShawn McCoy did not have a podium to himself. He was on the floor with everybody else talking about Florida Man.
But you talked to him, right?
I did. But he was actually the first player I talked to. But I did think that was interesting, especially when we're breaking down this backfield. I mean,
he's been completely uninvolved in the postseason, which, you know, maybe he ends up getting his ring, which would be great for him. But it's got to be pretty surprising for him that this is a guy who's finally in a Super Bowl, and then, you know, he's not one of the stars of the show. Because we've been doing all these like decade look back pieces, and it's easy to forget that, you know, he was kind of right up there behind Adrian Peterson as one of the best backs of the last decade.
I want to move to receivers. That obviously, I saw you tweeted that you charted your first receiver for reception perception. So before you maybe tease us with that, let's talk about two soon-to-be sophomore receivers that are playing in Sunday's game. I want to start with Deebo Samuel, someone we both liked.
Yep.
Heading into the draft and coming out of it because of landing spot. He did have a spot on the podium. And then I also want to talk about Mecole Hardman.
Was Deebo on the podium?
I thought
he was roaming around because Manny Sanders was on the podium.
I thought Deebo had a spot. Maybe he got the fan podium at a certain day. It was a fan podium situation.
He was on the fan podium with Dan Helly.
Yes.
Shout out to my guy, Dan Helly.
So Deebo, this is a pretty awesome ascent. I mean, there is an argument in which he is the number one receiver heading into, when you think about Sanders' age, et cetera, heading into 2020.
I think the only problem becomes with this type of receiver is that there's not really a path for him to be like the top target on his team. I can't remember where it was, you know, that someone asked, like, do you think he'll be a top 24?
You mean volume wise?
Yeah. From a pure bottom line targets perspective, because you will always have George Kittle there. George Kittle, by the way, apparently been playing with a torn labrum since 2018. I didn't mess the year up. 2018. Guy's been playing with messed up shoulder for 2 years.
He played with a broken bone in his ankle.
I mean,
this season.
Holy hell.
Right.
What a guy.
He's a stud.
He had a podium.
He had all the podiums.
Yeah, he had a podium. But Deebo Samuel, obviously he'll always be behind George Kittle in terms of just raw targets. And you could say the same thing, that's where Tyreek Hill is in, but they have Patrick Mahomes, and I like Jimmy Garoppolo, and I like the passing game for San Francisco, but it is certainly not a Kansas City level high octane one. So I think Deebo has a shot to be, you know, a top 35 receiver, but I wouldn't say he's like top 24 level, especially if Sanders is back there. Like, they have such a great setup right now because Sanders is that pristine route runner and Deebo is that physical beast. Like, they just, that's what the fun thing about the 49ers is, they just kick your ass at like all levels.
But I agree with you in terms of volume, but I do think that what Deebo does from a rushing perspective in a Shanahan offense makes him more intriguing. And you have to imagine that in his second season, if he takes a leap and and Shanahan is known when he was in Atlanta, right? Like, part of the knock against Matt Ryan understanding and producing in Shanahan's first year was the complexity of Shanahan's system. So if Deebo is able to pick that up and have more familiarity, I'm not sure that he can't break the top 25. I mean, I'm not going to put him well inside the top 25, but he can flirt with that 28 to 30 range, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of it does come down to whether Sanders is back. Because if Sanders is elsewhere, he would be the clear, in terms of wide receiver only, he'd be the clear top guy there.
Mecole Hardman.
Yeah, really interesting name for next year.
A guy who was fifth in team targets, you talk about volume, but tied Tyreek Hill for the most scores among the receiving core. You, maybe Sammy, I mean, Sammy Watkins had a podium on Monday night.
Okay.
Sammy Watkins, maybe he restructures his deal, right? DeMarcus Robinson probably takes a bit of a discount. I do think there's a world in which Mecole Hardman, who has had a relatively quiet postseason up until this point, which I think is good for fantasy moving forward, because if his stock continues to be depressed,
he goes out there and has big Super Bowl, we're going to be in a whole entirely
that's right.
Landscape.
I'd like to have him be much more of an under-the-radar player. I mean, he's not going to be under the radar. That hope isn't real. But I think maybe his stock will be depressed enough that you can get a cheap Will Fuller who stays on the field out of him.
Sure, and he started to play a little bit ahead of DeMarcus Robinson in the AFC Championship game, which I think was crucial because, I mean, man, that is just, when you get him and Tyreek Hill on the field together. That's a lot of speed. We know that. And I think Hardman showed a little bit more route running acumen than he got credit for at Georgia. I think there's so much potential there. He's also still pretty new to playing the wide receiver position. He was a defensive back not long ago. Mm-hmm. So I think he is one of the great like lottery tickets, like you said, of 2020.
And if Tyreek Hill misses any time, obviously, then we know.
Yeah, we know this guy can make big plays.
Really quickly, quick game for fantasy. DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, Hollywood Brown, Terry McLaurin, all soon to be sophomore receivers. Where do you rank Samuel and Hardman among this group? Are they still behind these top 1, 2, 3, 4 players? I'm going to say yes.
I'm going to say yes too. And just off the top of my head, I think I'd go Brown, Metcalf, AJ Brown, DK Metcalf, Terry McLaurin.
Yep, do it.
Hollywood
and then
Brown,
Hollywood's last.
Debo, and then Mecole Hardman in that order. Great. But, I mean, the Hollywood Brown one is really interesting. I was asked somewhere here on media.
He was here on media night.
He was here on media night, but somewhere on Radio Row, I was doing a hit somewhere, and I think it might have been the Roto World podcast, and they asked me about, Hollywood Brown, like who's a guy that you're really excited to chart this offseason? And I said Hollywood Brown is one because I think he has another one that we know has that explosive potential. And I still think it's incredible that Lamar Jackson had the passing season that he had efficiency wise and like Brown wasn't popping for 16 games. I mean, that's always a question. Will he be healthy? But at the same time, like if he ever is, I still think there's a world of potential there.
Limitless potential.
Some would say that.
Can you tell us really quickly who you did chart?
OBJ.
Interesting.
And I've got takes.
Can you tease us a little take?
I'll not even gonna tease it. I'll just give it to you away for free.
Well, I think probably don't, because we'll probably want to do some content around that more. So just give us a nug so it's not repetitive.
Not healthy. I mean,
did not believe he was healthy last year.
And I mean, that's the reality, right? And I talked to someone that worked with the Browns this year, talked to them on media night, and they were very insistent that not only was Beckham not healthy all year, Jarvis Landry apparently also, which by the way goes out and has a workman level season, also wasn't healthy all year. And it's just a reminder that we don't know, like it's one of those, you could be watching a guy on film, like charting him for reception, and like if you don't know that there's an injury there, they might look totally different. And I think that was the case for Beckham. Like some games, like the Seattle game, I think if you go back and watch that one, very impressive in that one. But overall, like the speed is there, but the quick change of direction stuff, which I think is pretty well affected by a groin injury, is definitely not there. So interesting if he can get right in 2020, but we'll see.
Right now, though, we have a big game on Sunday, Super Bowl 54. So let's talk about it. What are you looking forward to seeing most?
Well, I really want to see, obviously, one of the key matchups in this game, like strength on strength, and a lot of people are talking about it. It's the fact that the Chiefs are probably one of the best deep passing offenses right now. I mean, they've got Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill. We just went over that. And the 49ers have been the best defense in the league at limiting deep throws. So I want to see that. But also, like, one thing I think, like, you can say that, hey, Jimmy Garoppolo hasn't done much this postseason, yada, yada. But I think it's mostly been a product of the fact they just haven't had to have him do much. Yeah. Like,
the Packers game was complete evidence of that.
Yeah, like, and the crazy part is, too, Liz, like, they're running out all these defensive backs on the field, all the Green Bay Packers. And, like, they looked like they were more scared of that play-action passing game than they were scared of the rushing attack. And they never changed it up. And I think, like, that's the funny thing about, like, I think good coaches will just sit there and say, like Kyle Shanahan's like, okay, you're going to keep giving me my right hook. You're never going to make me go to my left hook. Like, I'm just going to smack you with the right hand all day. And like, that's what happened. And they never, like a dumb coach would probably like try to take a shot on third down, throw a pick, whatever. But the 49ers just never did that. They never had to.
Well, they have an identity and they leaned into it.
Yeah. So. But I think they have a multifaceted identity. Like, that's the thing. Like, they can run the ball, but also like conceptually, like they're not an old school, like, pounded up the middle running game. They're a very diverse rushing attack, like not the Ravens level diverse because they have Lamar Jackson, but in terms of like schemes and conceptions, they throw so much at you. I think these are the two offenses, like everybody's the two best play calls in the NFL, and I agree. I've said it probably 100 times too, but these two offenses I think make you think the most, like from a defensive perspective, like throw more at you than anyone else in the league.
So there's more of a chess match,
yeah,
is what you're saying. I think the San Francisco 49ers, I agree that obviously their run game and is more inventive, but I do think the identity of the 49ers is a ground-based identity.
Yes. And I mean, they build the passing game off of that.
Around it, yes.
With the play action and everything like that. But just how much they throw, like, I would say their identity is just, again, making you think, like, giving, like, I think the Ravens, the Chiefs, and the 49ers are the three best, and the Rams previously, but not as much anymore. They throw more at you in terms of, like, motion. Nobody's put players in motion more than Kyle Shanahan since he's arrived with the 49ers, and that's what they make you do, is they just give you so much to think about pre-snap that you're already behind them by the time they snap the ball.
I am very interested to see what Chris Jones and Frank Clark do in this matchup. I think that's going to be key. I think, you know, there were some health issues with those players and with the Kansas City Chiefs defense all together. And I think it's an underrated unit.
Sure.
Chris Jones, I believe, will be a free agent after year. So there's a lot there. The D Ford revenge situation
is,
so I think there's a lot more on defense than people are discussing. Everyone knows that, you know, the 49ers D-line and Nick Bosa being a rookie and the name that he comes with, the prince that was promised. Everyone focuses on that.
A lot of rookie orientation callbacks for a podcast that doesn't exist anymore.
But I think that people aren't focusing enough on the Chiefs defense.
Yeah.
And all that can be done there.
Well, I think that they're another team, too, that they've got a pretty defined weak area. And it's not the rush defense. I think it's the middle of the field. That's where you want to eat them up. Like, if you're going to throw the ball, you want to throw it over the middle, because their outside corners have been very good. The pass rush, like you mentioned, has been really good. And I think that's a reason why I like the 49ers passing game in this contest, because they gave up a lot of receptions to tight ends. There wasn't a ton of, like, big plays. They've got the honey badger back there, whatever. But, like, I think George Kittle's in for such a big contest because they can just hammer this team over the middle of the field. And I think you're going to want to get the ball out of Jimmy Garoppolo's hands quickly, he's not, like, funny, people could, like, want to call him a game manager, but he's really not a game manager because he makes a lot of mistakes, like, not just turnovers either, but sacks, stuff like that. And I think getting the ball out over the middle quickly would, you know, kind of lessen that.
Make it more fluid. Give me a score for this game.
I have been saying 34-30 all week, so I'll say 34-30, 49ers.
I said 33-30.
So I
think we're about the same. We're taking the over on it.
Yeah.
The over-under is at 54 last time I checked, so I think we're both taking the over on that.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be a high-scoring game.
I think it's going to be a close game, and so does Vegas. Interesting report. So right now, Vegas is – the Chiefs are giving 1.5, so they're slight margin favorites. But I did read a report that, you know, who knows how substantiated this is, that an anonymous source said that NFL executives league-wide felt the Chiefs were going to blow out the 49ers, which is interesting because Vegas does not agree.
Yeah.
So I think that...
Interesting.
You know.
Well, look...
Who are you taking, ultimately?
49ers.
Not just the points, but the win?
Yep, for the win. Okay. And George Kittle's my MVP pick. For the reasons I just mentioned.
I'm going Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes.
Wow. Hey. Oh, what? Really out on a limb there, Liz Loza. No.
Well, listen, sometimes you don't have to get too clever.
Yeah, that's true. And look, I mean, I don't feel comfortable not being on the side of QB Jesus, so it's not easy.
No, our jobs are very difficult.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, if there's one thing this week has taught me, it is that this job is just
the best.
It's thankless and it's hard and difficult, and, like, people, please feel sorry for us.
On that note, all right. Any last predictions for the game? I'm gonna say it. No one said it. The damn halftime show. I am looking forward to.
You wrote about this.
I did write about
it. The website.
I did for sports.yahoo.com. The.
We got vanity URLs for a reason.
I don't think we have those.
Not.
We very much do.
We do?
You can also go to yahoosports.com/fantasyfootballpodcast. Go directly to this podcast.
Now that you've been done listening to it, do that.
I'm very much looking forward to the halftime show.
Why are you looking forward to the halftime show?
Well, not for nothing. For the first time in Super Bowl history, two Latinas, J-Lo and Shakira, will be headlining the event. We are in the city that Gloria Estefan is very tied to, and she has performed in two Super Bowls. In fact, she was the first person of Latino origin to ever perform at a Super Bowl halftime show. This is the first halftime show that Roc Nation and Jay-Z have been a part of since the partnership with the NFL that happened in August. So I think there are some changes afoot, and I'm excited to see them in place. And I think, I'd never been to Miami before. So like being on the ground in Miami, I completely understand those two women opening the show. And I have my hope. So apparently Jay-Z asked, this is per Gloria Estefan, asked Ms. Estefan to perform. And she said, no, I've done that before. It's too much work. I'm not doing it again. But I'm keeping my fingers crossed for a cameo.
Well, we will just have to watch and find out. I love it. I'm very excited as well.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. We'll end on that note. You can follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. Apparently, we got some sort of vanity URL that I should have been plugging throughout the entire season.
YahooSports.com/fantasy podcast. Fantasy football podcast.
Like Brett said.
Boom.
You can follow me on Twitter at LizLoza_FF. Matt is at MattHarmon_BYB. We are out. Happy Super Bowl 54.